From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What really perplexed or downright frustrated gardeners in 2018? I asked that recently on Facebook and elsewhere and harvested the final crop of urgent garden questions for the year, and Ken Drews is here to help answer them as ever. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
It's time to answer the final batch of your urgent garden questions for the waning year, and you know who is here to help me do that. Hi, Ken. How are you, Froggy?
Rivet.
I knew it would be. I'm Froggy, too. I'm sorry.
Well, I had a cold, then I had bronchitis, and now I'm having another cold.
Oh, I think I just am just falling apart, but whatever. Anyway, every time I'm around small children, I blame small children.
I'll say.
They have large germs. Yes.
Yes.
But they are adorable.
You should make a t-shirt or embroider a pillow or something.
So I know my overall urgent garden question of 2018 is what's up with the weather, but we won't go there, right?
it's typical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had, no surprise probably since it's been cold in a lot of areas of the country already. We had a bunch of sort of indoorish questions since, it's that time of year. One from a person named Joan, who said her question's about coleus. She bought some coleus seeds. The variety is chocolate-covered cherry. and they were easy to grow and grew well and really pretty. She loved them. She said, hey, I'm going to take some cuttings, put them in, potting medium, has kept them moist. They're doing great. The only thing, she says, because she wanted to carry it over for next year, the only thing is that the new growth, she says, is totally different from the original color. I thought I was cloning them with this cuttings method. Can you explain this different growth to me? Got any thoughts about that?
Well, she was cloning them.
Yes.
She did make clones.
Which is asexual reproduction, right? That's what we mean by that.
Or vegetative.
Vegetative, right,
say.
Right.
Non-sexual, right? Not from seeds.
Right.
So she's taken the actual genetic material.
Yes.
And produced some new plants. But if she's done it in the fall and she's doing it in even a sunny window or maybe under lights, that's probably what's going on is she doesn't have as much sun. And to get those colors, especially those dark colors, it's almost like, I shouldn't say sunburn because it doesn't really harm them, but they really need that intense summer sunlight to bring out that color.
Yeah, and even the ones that we think of coleus as a, quote, shade plant, even though in recent years they've brought out the sun coleus, varieties and all that. It's still, even outside in the semi-shade, it's bright compared to anywhere in the darkest days of the year, which we're in right now.
And Not to mention glass.
Right, exactly. So, and even if she's got them under plant lights and so forth, it's still not quite the same, I don't think. I agree with you. I think it's because I've got other plants that I'm carrying over in the house, not coleus specifically, but everybody looks a little peaked. Do you know what I mean? I mean, it's not quite the same. So I think that's a light thing. I agree with you, and that they really fade in indoor low light especially.
So hang on, Jeremy.
Hang on. And if the plantlets look healthy, I think that's great. Some people, I think, have to take cuttings again, right? Because they get kind of stretched out.
Cuttings.
Yeah. To have a good sort of stout, stocky thing when the time comes for next May or whatever. Kathy wrote in to ask how to repot a jade plant. And I thought it was interesting because at the same time, almost the same day, a friend of mine, Katrina, wrote and said, my jade plant that I've had for a million years is blooming. What in the heck is going on? So jade plants, should we start with how to repot?
Sure. I don't know how big this plant is, but it's not easy, especially when they're really old. Jade plants are very brittle, and when you try to repot them, the pieces break off.
Yeah.
Then you make cuttings, and you have too many plants, but that's another story. So what I would do is wrap newspaper around the plant and sort of cinch it in a little bit, make a collar or I could even say a girdle, not too tight, of newspaper and tape it. So when you're moving it around, it's pretty much protected. And then you either turn the pot over if it's not too heavy and knock it on a counter edge or something, and it'll slip out. If it's a very heavy plant, you can turn it on its side to try to get it out. Wrapping the pot with your fist as you turn it, depends on what kind of pot it is.
And that's wrapping with an R, not W-R-A-P-P. It's wrapping with an R.
Yeah. Or you could take a knife, or, you know, it would be good, like a palette knife or an icing spreader, something flexible.
Right.
And go around the inside rim of the pot. If it's a plastic pot, it's going to, you know, that'll be easy because you can squish it.
But then slip
it out and pot it up. And I'd say only pot it up one size, but that's kind of a general thing that I do. So if it's in an 8-inch pot, you go to a 10-inch pot, et cetera.
Right. Now, I didn't know that that in its native South Africa, I think it's from the Cape Town region of South Africa originally, the jade plant. I didn't know that it actually is a small tree. You know, like a shrubby, it's like a shrubby, like...
A shrubby, right.
Yeah, but like, you know, maybe 6 to 10 feet or something. I mean, I've even read about, but crazy, right? I mean, you know, and here we are, we've been sort of pinching off bits and making them into houseplants and sort of keeping them small by keeping the root system constrained in pots, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, fun. So really the key to successfully repotting one, you're saying, is that first we need to protect the above ground growth so that it doesn't get all banged up in the process by making this sort of collar.
That's what I do.
Yeah. Okay. And do you do that for other plants? Are there other plants that are sort of tricky?
Well, I do that with cacti just to protect me.
Self-defense.
Not to protect them.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So that's, you know, it kind of brings up, and I said, like I said, my friend Katrina at the same time was sort of saying, mine's blooming. Do you have any idea, like, why that is, you know, or have you ever had one that bloomed?
Well, it's funny that you're saying that because I did actually speak to someone recently about that very thing.
Oh.
Because I'd seen them blooming in California, in San Francisco, actually, where there are shrubs and the people grow them sort of, you know, in the hell strip right along the road or the street. And they have kind of nice starry white flowers and they get covered with them. So why? Well, outdoors in San Francisco, I can guess they've gone through a winter. So indoors with the plant, it's probably cool temperatures. Maybe the plant was kept dry, which if you want it to bloom, that's what you would do. But I think also daylight length. I was going to say day length, but all days are 24 hours, Ken. It's the number of daylight hours.
Right. And actually, is it long nights that helps treat? Because, I mean, I'm thinking now, I said before, Cape Town region of South Africa. So I'm thinking you have a sort of dry, cooler, during your short day period, during your rest period, plants. I have other plants that are from the areas like that in the world, Clivia, you know, where what triggers it is cool, dry, the shorter days, and it rests then, and then, boom, it's happy. It triggers it to do its thing in the late winter, early spring.
Right, and one more thing is that it has to be mature, I think. If you have a cutting that you just took and a young plant, especially if a jade plant, it's not going to do it. And Clivia, too. You know, it'll only do it when it's a grown-up.
Oh, interesting. Do you, in terms of repotting in general, do you do it at a particular, not with jade in specifically, but are you a person who has like a protocol? Like, do you repot your things in spring or fall or anytime they needed it, or what's your thing?
Well, if I'm bringing a plant inside from a summering outdoors and it really needs it, or if I've broken the pot or something like that, I'll repot it. But in general, I pot stuff in the spring when plants are going into active growth, because then there's no chance of me overwatering them because they're growing and they're using the moisture.
Right. Good point.
In the winter, you can accidentally overwater things. And you want plants to rest, and when you pot them up, they want to grow, and it's not really the right time of year for them to grow because, as we said, they don't have as much light.
Yeah.
And so they're going to get leggy and maybe even buggy. So I like to keep my plants unconscious if possible through the winter. So there's less trouble for me and I don't have to water as often. And I keep them as cool as I can do it. But you and I both have kind of cool houses.
Yeah. Okay. So I used to always, when my houseplants were on their way outside in the spring, I would bring this big garden cart, which was kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a big plastic bucket, like the body of the cart. You know, it's fiberglass or something. And I'd mix my potting medium in there, and one by one, I'd like bring them out. I'd put them in, you know, take them out of their pots, get the slightly bigger pot, fill that with the medium. You know, I used it as my potting bench, so to speak, while they were on. And I was so good about it for such a long time, and I've become so bad. But that's the thing to do, I think, what you're saying, is when they're on their way back out,
right,
do it then. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, when they're
good
ready
idea
to start. Yeah.
I can't wait.
Yeah, you're coming by to help, aren't you? Didn't you say?
In April.
We have it on the calendar.
May.
Okay, good. Okay, and you're bringing the sandwiches. Good, thank you. Okay. A lot of the questions that came in when I said, you know, what were your most perplexing things, a lot of them were ones that we've heard before because they are the most perplexing. So I thought we could kind of remind people that some of them we have talked about before, and I'll give the links in the transcript if they really want to dig in deeper so that, you know, we don't go into too much detail about them. But for instance, we had another question from Kimberly about equisetum, about the horsetail rush. And I remember you have fought it yourself. She has it in her beds. And you keep digging, don't you?
I just pull it out. It's not so hard to get out. Mm-hmm. And I don't attempt to get it all out because I probably never will.
Right.
But, you know, I just, and mostly when it's coming up in the spring, it pushes new growth and then it sort of sits around. So it's not so terrible. I shouldn't say that because probably for some people it is terrible. And mine's in a place where I can get to it, although it is near moisture.
Right.
But I'd just say weed it out.
Yeah.
Weed it out.
So I'll get it out. And we did have some good links and the last time we talked about it earlier this year. So what I'll do is, like I said, I'll give Kimberly the link to dig deeper in the transcript. Similarly, we had kind of a repeat question about everybody's favorite terror, the Asian jumping worms that have become invasive in various areas, more and more, both in natural areas and in gardens. Karen is asking, you know, should she continue to amend her soil when she's got them and so forth? And again, with that one, I had a great interview this year with a researcher at University of Wisconsin-Madison and kind of got the update on where the thinking is. So I want to just, again, in the name of time to get to some new things, say, Karen, we've got the info you need, but I'm going to refer to it in the transcript. So let's see, squash bugs. Carol wanted to know about how to defeat her squash bugs, which she says are her nemesis. That's something I've spent. Do you get them? Do you grow squash or cucurbits in your garden?
I have from time to time. Mm-hmm. You mean like the worms in the stems?
No, that's squash vine borer. No, the squash bug. It's kind of a shield shaped brown hard shelled insect. Anasa tristis is, I think, its I was gonna say botanical name, its species name or whatever. I have lots of stories about it. I actually interviewed a couple of years ago Diane Alston, an entomologist at Utah State, who has a specialty in coming up with solutions for cucurbit pests. And she said, you know, on the home gardener scale, the number one thing we need to do to reduce this problem in our gardens is to reduce overwintering success, because these bugs actually overwinter in the adult stage. They kind of like go to sleep, you know, and if there is a food source, if there is a friendly, you know, dilapidated old plant, anything that they know is like a friendly place to do that, they're just going to have more success. So what we want to do is we really want to get all that debris out of there. And if we're not composting hot, really hot, you know, our compost heaps, we want to actually throw it away, like get it to another location, not put it in our heap. So we want to make the overwintering possibilities minimized, and lots of other tactics, but that's the number one and one that could still be done even at this late date in the garden if there's debris around to get it out of there, and you'll minimize. So I'll give some links for Carol as well on that. Yeah, lots of – oh, and growing resistant varieties, I should say, as well. Royal acorn, butternut, green striped kuschau if you're in the south, or pink banana, one of my favorite squashes. They're more resistant than others. So lots of info with the transcript.
You know, you're talking about some interesting people that you've interviewed, and you probably have never interviewed Mark Hakkadurian, the director of Glasshouses at Glasshouse Horticulture at the New York Botanical Garden. He's great, and that's who told me about the jade plant flowering. So we'll just put him on the list.
Oh, good. Okay, we should definitely have him on the show. Good idea. Good idea. So. Going back sort of indoors for a minute, what, or as many minutes as we want, what else is going on there at your place? Because we're in the indoor garden, right? If we've got anything going on, it's the indoor garden. What's going
on? There's lots going on. I'm kind of surprised. Have you ever seen the camellia? It's a camellia sasanqua called Yuletide.
No.
It has the most perfect name because the flowers are so red. And the leaves are so green. It's the ultimate Christmas plant, I think. And it's one of the easiest camellias to grow. It just wants a cool temperatures, summering outdoors. It's funny, we were talking about repotting. I potted that plant down. It was never growing and it never looked good. And I unpotted it, just wondering what's going on. Turns out it hardly had any roots. It was over-potted, something that I don't think that's ever happened to me before. So I put it in a smaller pot and it doubled in size.
Interesting. Huh.
Weird, huh?
So it liked the confinement. Interesting.
Yeah, well, it's not confined yet, but it I guess it probably was too much moisture and stuff like that.
Right, it was just swimming.
I've got some abutilins, flowering maples blooming.
I love them.
Given a very special abutilin that was supposed to be a double pink powder puff abutilin, and it turns out to have these gigantic, for abutilin, they're like hibiscus, orange flowers. I'm not sure what it is. There's one that's like it that has bells, but this is not bells. These are flat.
Oh, interesting.
And open.
Like discs, like big, yeah, like disco belly kind of things. Yeah,
yeah, huh. It blooms all the time, but in the summer too, but mostly right through the winter. But I have to tell you, the thing that turns me on the most, and it's very weird, are the euphorbias, the euphorbia millii, the Thai hybrids. Are you familiar with those?
No, do they have another common name?
Well, they're crown of thorns.
Oh, okay. Crown of thorns, euphorbias. Okay.
A lot of people like that, like the jade plant, because it's so easy to grow. It just wants a sunny window, and the bad thing is overwatering. So you just leave it alone, especially in the winter. But I was in Florida probably about 12, 15 years ago, and I saw a crown of thorns with flowers that were almost 2 inches across. And I did some research, and it turns out these are Thai hybrids. They're actually from Thailand. And I got some when I was in Florida, and then I've gotten a few more as rooted cuttings. Some of them came from Thailand. Now you can find them on eBay, believe it or not.
Crazy.
And they have incredible spotted and splash-colored flowers that are green and red and pink and white and cream. And they're blooming right now in the winter a little bit, but in the summer, they're just, it almost looks like there's hothouse geraniums when the red one's blooming. It's this big ball of flowers.
Huh, they're so really, you found great. Your first one in Florida, and you've had them for how long?
Yeah, about almost 15 years, a couple. They grow straight up like a single stick.
Okay.
Which is not very nice. And then the pot falls over. So I tried to...
Oh, you're making me want millions of them. Oh, that sounds great. I'm teasing.
I tried to get it to branch by cutting off the top. And, of course, I wanted to root it. And I tried that a couple times, and each time the cuttings rotted.
Yeah.
And I talked to... I know with cuttings of succulents, you let them dry and stuff to callus over. I talked to someone who has a greenhouse business in Pennsylvania, and he said he does it all the time, no problem. And then I was thinking, what's the difference? And I realized warm, humid.
Right.
Because he's got a warm, humid greenhouse. So I started taking cuttings in July when it's warm and humid, and I put them in the shade, and I let them callus over for almost 2 weeks.
Right.
And they've got leaves, and then I pot them up, and it's been a complete success
ever
since then.
It's so interesting because warm, humid, if you want to say callus, you know, it sounds like counterintuitive, humid, right? But a potato, organic potato farming expert told me years ago and reminded me not so long ago, if you do want to, you know, if you get seed potatoes, you know, the little potatoes to use to start your potatoes in the spring, sometimes if there's a big one in the bag, you want to cut it up and make it into multiple starts, you know, as opposed to putting a giant one in the ground. And so you need to callus it. And he said, now, Margaret, don't forget, it's warm, humid. It's not a warm, dry spot. Because I think a lot of people think, oh, turn on a fan, dry that thing out. And that's not what you want to do. So, again, this is another one of these sort of propagation-y kind of things, like you're talking about with yours, where we're multiplying something, but we need it to callus, but that doesn't mean dry it up, literally.
Yeah, I guess, because it's... It doesn't, you know, it's not out in the rain.
No. But not like baking right, dry either. Yeah.
If I left it in a dry place for 2 weeks, that would be it.
Right. Exactly. So this allows it to happen more slowly and naturally. Yeah. Interesting. So you have a whole. How did I never know about these things that you have these? I didn't know. Crown of Thorns.
You'll have to look up some pictures.
Okay.
Online. The regular crown thorns have little tiny fire engine red flowers, and they're okay, but these are just, they're magnificent.
Huh. All right, good. So he's got a camellia, so he's got his abutilon, he's got his crown of thorns, lots of stuff going on over there at Kendrews's.
And I got some buds of citrus coming, and that means in January and February, I'll get my paintbrush out and I'll pollinate them, and a short 9 months later, I'll have a Meyer lemon.
So just before we run out of time, there were a couple other miscellaneous questions. Also, a couple more that were things that we'd covered during the year, but people continue to be vexed by them. So I understand there was one about black walnut toxicity and kind of how to... are there plants that grow well under black walnut trees? There's a great list on, I think it's the Morton Arboretum website. Is that? Yeah, Morton Arboretum. And I can give links to that with a transcript for that questioner. Someone was asking about when's the best time to disperse beneficial nematodes, you know, to get rid of Japanese beetles. And with something like that, it's always depends on what product you're using, and you really need to follow the supplier's instructions. Normally it's spring, and then again sometimes late summer or early fall, but following the directions I think is going to be key. And then of course we had one about when is someone going to breed a rose that's resistant to rose rosette disease, and I had a great interview with an expert about that from Star Roses, and there's a whole website, roserosette.org, and again I'll give the links. I don't see anybody promising anything tomorrow, unfortunately, on that note. Yeah, lots. So we're going to keep doing Q&As in the new year, Ken?
Yeah, this is great. I'm learning so much. I can't wait to get to your site.
Crown of Thorns. I'm looking it up when I get home and seeing what I think, if I have room for them. So Ken Drews, thank you so much, and I hope you feel better. I hope we both stop being so froggy.
Yeah, I'm going to go to bed right after this.
All right. Thank you for being brave and getting out from under the covers to talk.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Talk to all of the rest of you again soon, I hope, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.